It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are indeed off and running for this 17th day of November 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to jump into the madcap multimedia, wacky, zany, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room and just sort of augment your participation in the program as we cruise through the next 3 hours. All you got to do is click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. It's all free. It's all easy. And you will be immediately greeted by, well, me. I'm greeting you now. And Jug and Punch, Kid Mark, and BT Blom. Others will be along presently. So I guess White Rose server's down. Is still down. Let me get a message out on that. We never know until we start, you know? Sorry about the drum loop. Okay, so that's okay. That's part of it. Now let's see. This is what a staff does. Although it may come up at some point in time. I mean, there's just no way of knowing. Anyway, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Friday on the front porch. Hey, there is midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan, coming in. I think Sparky will be a little bit late to the program. He told me last night that he's got a six-month checkup appointment, so he should be in by, he should be here in the next hour or so. Hey, thanks for being here, Steve. I appreciate it. Anyway, Earther's there, Jug of Punch is there, Kid Mark's there, Squeaky's there, VT Bomb's there. More folks wandering in. We've got thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Libby. Thank you for your help, Libby. Thank you as well to Nancy in New York. Thank you, Nancy. This is the overnight crew, our subscribers. Thank you, Laborman. Out in New Mexico way. And thank you, Arthur, in Arizona. All of that works together to say that to get us to the point where we've only got $401 to raise this evening to finish the week. So I guess we're in one of those places where we're looking for another Friday on the front porch miracle. 401, that's, oh dear God, no. Just no. whatever we can do, right? And the general reminder obtains, if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, there's two different ways to do it. You can always go to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, and if you just want to do a, you know, just set it and forget it, click on make this a recurring monthly donation, put in the amount, and move on. Or if you want to kick in to help this evening, that's awfully cool too. And then there's also the, for those who don't like PayPal, there's the Patreon campaign, patreon.com, patreon.com/BobKincaid, BobKincaid. Okay? Okay, so it, like I said, it's Friday on the front porch. It's about 5 minutes past the hour. And where we go, well, that'll be up to you. You know, here in a little bit, yeah, thanks, Marty. White Rose Society, MP3, stream, nope, Headline Live working, yeah. And by the way, the Patreon link, just to make things easy, the Patreon link is available at headon.live. Just click it and it goes right to it. So that's really, really helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thanks for letting me know. Sister Carol Baker saying, I can hear you. I can see that you can hear me. Thank you very much, Sister Carol. Glad to know it indeed. So, well, that's awfully nice, Steve. Thank you. Thanks for the show, Bob. We appreciate you. That is downright heartwarming. A quick program reminder, just so, because I know everybody doesn't listen every night. Next week's programming schedule, live Monday, live Tuesday. Not live Wednesday, not live Thursday, but back live on Friday. And in fact, on Friday, there will be 4 hours. There will be 2 hours here and then 2 hours of Malloy on Friday evening. So hopefully we'll have a whopping good time after everybody sleeps off the turkey. I'm all set. Well, kind of all set. Today, Ferg and I were out running around. I picked up, because they were... You know, no, they weren't throwing them out of helicopters or anything, and they weren't landing like bags of wet cement. But yeah, I caught turkeys at about 50 cents a pound, and wow! So I've got a 10-pounder. It's thawing, and this weekend, well, the test turkey will go on the smoker. I've got a can of Foster's lager, and we'll prop it up on the Foster's can, stick the probe thermometer in it, and hopefully wonderful things will then happen. And then if everything works out according to plan, I'll get a bigger bird, and on Wednesday, well, I'll get it on Tuesday, thawed by Wednesday, put it on the smoker on Wednesday, and late Wednesday evening, I will jump in the vehicle and drive over to our daughter and grandchildren's house, and I'll get busy then, taking an iron skillet with me for making the cornbread for the dressing, and hopefully it will be much enjoyed. I know our eldest will enjoy it, so that's the plan. Well, that's awfully nice, too. Steve from Georgia Stan is just being in genial mode this evening. Steve says, pay attention, Brother Deacon Asa. If I ever cross paths with Brother Deacon Asa, case of beer on me. His internet stream has saved the day more times than I can count. And that's the right. It's the truth. Mm-hmm. So it's Friday on the front porch. You know, we end the week, every week, with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, inviting all and sundry to participate in just a free-for-all conversation. If you've never participated before, well, there's no time like the present for jumping in, and you're mighty welcome to. Yeah, no tune in either. Hold on. Okay, so I think I've answered all the emails. And it, for general purposes, Billable Rick says, glad to hear you're bringing an iron skillet on the road with you. That's an essential accoutrement when traveling on the back roads in case one comes against a troop of Trumpanzees. That is, well, they do come in handy. But mostly it's for cornbread. Yeah, it's very traditional. Just mashed potatoes and gravy, and turkey gravy, of course. And cornbread dressing. Not stuffing. Do we have to do this again? If you put that stuff inside your bird, you're almost guaranteeing that somebody's going to get sick. Because you can't, when you stuff the bird, it's almost impossible to get everything up to temperature in there, so that all the pathogens that exist inside, because nasty. So no stuffing, it's dressing. But, you know, cranberry sauce, you know, the works. I don't know. Maybe some fancy schmancy green beans. Who knows? And hey, there's Silent R. Lamar wandering into the room. Hey, Silent R. Brother Deacon Asa, they're trying to float you. Marty said, I'll join that one for Asa, case of good beer for him. Yeah, Asa, I can tell you, is a hophead. He likes him some IPAs. You know, like by the front end loader, scoop full into the whole bat, right? Oh, and by the way, I just wanted, I worry, I fret. Because, well, it's more than just a radio program. We're a community, and I want everybody to be happy and to experience life at peak maximum happiness. That's why I am that's why I'm really excited this evening to tell you all about something new from the hardworking peripatetic scientists at Horn Labs. Introducing this evening, to help get you through the holidays, Cha-Cha Chicory. Cha-Cha Chicory, only from Horn Labs, a capsulized form of vegan, GMO-free, free-range, cruelty-free, gluten-free chicory compound guaranteed to keep you peppy through the grind of the holiday season. Cha-Cha Chicory, only from Horn Labs. Remember, it's a bargain at $100 for a 3-month supply, or if you just want to test it out first, that's okay. $40 for a 1-month supply. But if you only order the 1-month supply, well, you won't get the little bundle of test strips. We provide a bundle of test strips for you for each and every 3-month supply customer here at Horn Labs, so they can test their cha-cha-cha chicory at home and be absolutely certain that there is no nutritional value to it whatsoever. Cha-cha-cha chicory, only from Horn Labs. An absolute bullshit nutritional supplement that will do absolutely nothing for you. But since it's got no value whatsoever, no nutritional value, and in fact isn't even real at all, we can also guarantee you that it has no lead, no arsenic, no cadmium, no barium, no manganese, no rare earth elements whatsoever, no heavy metals, no toxic compounds, and is, as I noted, 100% natural. Cha-cha-cha chicory, only from Horn Labs. You know, I've never cared much for chicory. And that's why every day I take a handful of cha-cha-cha chicory from Horn Labs so that I can get a day's worth of chicory goodness with each and every sunrise. Cha-cha-cha chicory from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, COD, FOB, MIC, KEY, MOUSE. Cha-cha-cha chicory only from Horn Labs. Well, thank you. Arnold says, you're doing a great impersonation of Gary Dull. Gary Dull. Oh, well, you know, my only purpose here is to let folks know that this is a real, live, honest-to-goodness radio, professional radio program, and you can't be one of those unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. And here at Horn Labs, we've got an entire catalog now. Sure. And, well, you'll note that nobody's died from any of it yet. How about that? See how it works. So we got stuff to talk about this evening. This just in from Scott and Punky. Horn Labs ingredient analysis, and based on independent early testing, there's a notable absence of chicory in cha-cha-cha chicory from Horn Labs. You're damn right there is. It had cost us something to produce cha-cha-cha chicory if we had to use actual chicory in cha-cha-cha chicory. But since it's a nutritional supplement, we can say pretty much anything we want to. Isn't that cool? Yeah. And if it had real chicory in it, you could mix a little in with your coffee and make it French market style, a la New Orleans. Yeah, but there's no chicory in our cha-cha-cha chicory. Steve in New York says, I've been having problems with my tango and samba dancing. Will this help? Will it help me with my time and rhythm? Nothing I've found helps me with this. I'd much rather take a pill than practice. Well, I can understand that. You know, just the other day, someone asked me, Bob, if I take cha-cha-cha chicory every day, will I be able to play the piano? And I said, I don't see why not. And they said, well, that's great, because I've never played piano before. Thus, the enduring testimonial power of cha-cha-cha chicory only from Horn Labs. Brother Deacon Asa, who worries about this a lot, says, but does cha-cha-cha chicory help one prep up one's chode for extended periods of time? Well, just think about it. Cha-cha-cha and chode always begin, all begin with ch. So there you go. Cha-cha-cha chicory, only from Horn Labs. There we go. So, like I said, there's something that just tells me when we get around to the front porch portion of the program. you guys just won't let it go, will you? Subject line, playing the piano, Steve in New York. But Horn Labs does not guarantee you will play it well. Oh, no. No, no, no. Horn Labs only stands behind the infinite monkeys theory. You know, infinite monkeys with infinite pianos. Eventually, one of them will play the Moonlight Sonata. But it could be you. If you've ordered your 3-month supply of cha-cha-cha chicory. Okay? Like I said, I got a sneaking suspicion we'll be talking about the creepy, sleazy Roy Moore child molester behavior in the front porch portion of the program. But there's a lot of other stuff, too. And with the week ending and a short week next week, I wanted to make sure that we caught up on some stuff. because there's stuff to catch up on. Ordinarily, we might save this for Moran Monday or Titanic Tuesday or maybe even Thorn in the Side Thursday. It's not really prayer meeting Wednesday material. But in the midst of all the other chaos and the Sturm und Drang, did you happen to catch the story about our embassy in Moscow? We still got one of those, you know. And once upon a time, we used to guard the embassies with United States Marines. Gone are the days, I guess. But we've still got an embassy there, and there's a bit of a problem because Big Bad Vladdy Daddy ordered the American diplomatic mission to remove 755 employees from staff. And so that meant a significant loss of security guards for the embassy. So how has the Trump administration responded to that exigency, that vicissitude? Is it a vicissitude?
Yeah.
Well, the Trump administration and the State Department Oh, wait a minute. This is too good. Wait a minute. Our first cowbell of the evening. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Subject line, cha-cha-cha chicory. So, Bob, are you saying that cha-cha-cha chicory from Horn Labs will enhance my pianist? It absolutely will, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like the guy who walked into the bar. It reached into his coat, pulled out a little box and opened up and set a little piano down and reached into his other pocket and pulled out of his a little guy wearing a tuxedo and tails and the guy sits down and begins to play the tiny piano. And the bartender says, "Well, I've seen everything. What's going on here?" He says, "Well, I found a genie." And the bartender says, "So many of these stories start that way. And he only gave me one wish, cheap-ass genie." He said, "Well, the genie asked me what I wanted. And I said I wanted a 12-inch penis." Hard of hearing, the genie was, so here he is. Enjoy the music. Yes, it will enhance your pianist, right? Shame on me, I know. You're not going to let me do the story, are you? You're just not. Steve wants to know, will I be able to play long and hit the keys hard? As hard as you want to. As hard as you need to. And as long as you need to. Because that's just, yeah. Anyway, back to Moscow. You know how anybody who thinks that the Trump administration is in cahoots with the Russians and Big Bad Vladdy Daddy and all of that, and well, they've obviously been ponerized and don't understand that Russia is our good friend and Vlad is just a cuddly, snuggly, squeezably soft huggy bear. Yeah, well, It turns out that for some reason or another, with a need for security at the U.S. Embassy, and, you know, it's kind of a spy-ish sort of place. It's not a swanky posting, the embassy job in Moscow. It's generally one for people who are deadly in earnest, career, diplomatic corps, you know, the occasional CIA people, that sort of thing. And so you want good security. you want to be able to maintain tight secrecy, I guess. And you got all kinds of highfalutin information passing back and forth. And well, that's why the Trump administration, in need of security for, again, I repeat, the U.S. Embassy. That's why the Trump administration hired a private Russian company for embassy security. And that private company, that private Russian company, well, it was co-founded by the guy who used to be Big Bad Vladdy Daddy's boss at the old KGB back in the days of the Soviet Union. He's an 82-year-old master spy. And his company just got a $2.8 million, wait for it, no-bid contract. They didn't even have to bid for it. We just gave it to them. I mean, Jesus, do you realize how dodgy that looks when not even whatever the company that used to be Blackwater now is, it gets to do that sort of thing? Yeah, the Office of Acquisitions in D.C., part of the Trump administration. And security guards at the American Embassy in Moscow, as well as at the consulates in Petrograd, Ekaterinburg, and Vladivostok, will all come from Elite Security Holdings. And Elite Security Holdings has close ties to Viktor G. Budanov. It's very close to Boris Badenov, but no, Viktor G. Budanov, who used to be an exalted high mucky muck in the KGB. He's a retired general, as a matter of fact. At one point in time, he was the head of Soviet counterintelligence. So, gosh, well, I don't think I would transmit so much as my great-great-grandmother's cornbread dressing recipe to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. Not that I think Vlad would have any interest in, you know, hillbilly food, but no, really. The Trump State Department says that Elite Security has been vetted with relevant national and local agencies and won't increase the threat risk. U.S. missions around the world work constantly under intelligence and physical security threats. This contract does not change that fact. Well, no, I guess it doesn't. But Jesus Christ. This administration could screw up a one-car parade. Meanwhile, former General Viktor G. Budanov retired from the spy business in 1992. Sure he did. Because he got mad at Boris Yeltsin. He doesn't hold an ownership stake anymore, but a company called, or a newspaper called Kommersant, says that his son Dmitry runs the Moscow office. But Viktor, he's got nothing in it. And you know, Dmitry, he's just a good Russian capitalist, right? Right. God, how embarrassing this is. Tasks previously handled by local guards hired directly by the embassy in Moscow, like screening visitors, well, elite security employees will take over those jobs. There'll still be Marines there, but now, oh dear. American companies apparently were contacted about taking on the security job, but, quote, no U.S. firm has been located with the requisite licensing or desire to operate in country. I wonder if that's a clue. On the other hand, the New York Times interviewed a guy named Mikhail Lyubimov. He's a former KGB spook. He knew General Budinov back in there, back when they were Soviet KGB people together. He said, "This is very, very good for us." I know it's the Chekhov wary. This is very good for us. If I were a chief there, I would never do this for a very clear reason. And went on to say, you know, Russian embassy in Washington would not put security in hands of American company known to have ties to CIA. But then again, your President Trump, he owes favors, doesn't he? You do not want to not pay favors that you owe to Vladimir Putin. You simply don't. No. Yeah, meanwhile, Mr. Budinov has great admiration for Big Bad Vladdy Daddy. Well, of course he does. He wants to. He's very happy being an 82-year-old former KGB general, and he'd kind of like to become an 83-year-old former KGB general. It's a little embarrassing sometimes, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So that's the international sort of foreign intelligence front. Let's bring it back home, shall we? How's about bringing it home to Tennessee? And I'm speaking particularly about a little place called Teleco Plains, Tennessee, over in the eastern portion of the state. They were having a Thanksgiving dinner, pre-Thanksgiving dinner there at the church yesterday afternoon. And people, you know, it's a church, it's a little, you know, little beating heart of the community. That's the way it is in Appalachia. Churches are social centers as well as worship centers. And so a man and his wife showed up. And as they were standing there for their Thanksgiving get-together, the conversation turned, as conversations will, to current events. Hell, maybe they talked about Roy Moore, too. But what we know they did talk about is they talked about the shooting at the church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. And as they talked about, you know where this is going, don't you? As they went on to talk about what happened at Sutherland Springs, an octogenarian member of the congregation reached into his pants or his coat or who knows what and pulled out a .380 caliber semi-automatic Ruger pistol. And he said, "I carry my handgun everywhere." And so then he passed it around like some of us would pass around pictures of our grandchildren. He passed it around and showed it to other folks, and then they passed it among themselves. They gave it back to Brother Codger. Well, Well, it's always frustrating because you ever been in one of those situations where you're telling a joke? I knew somebody once upon a time in school. I knew a young woman who was notorious for this. She would deliberately not pay attention to the joke until she saw and heard whether everybody else laughed at it. She wanted to make sure that she wasn't going to waste her time listening to a bad joke. But if everybody laughed, she'd then turn around and say, "Tell it again. I want to hear it this time." No, really. Well, somebody showed up and he put his pistol in and said, "Wait a minute. Wait a minute there, Cletus. I want to see your Freedom Protector too." And so Cletus pulls out his pistol and says, "With this loaded indicator on the pistol, I can tell it's not loaded." And then he shot himself and his wife. According to Teleco Plains Police Chief Russ Parks, evidently he just forgot that he rechambered the weapon. Injuries don't appear to be life-threatening, and ain't no charges gonna be filed. Well, yeah, okay then. And how's about that? 80-year-old guy's gonna carry a pistol to church, and by cracky, by Jiminy, if any ISIS, liberal Democrat, heathen, atheist, homosexual, lesbian, socialist, comes in there trying to steal our freedom Bibles, yeah, I'll plug them as soon as I get out of the hospital. What are you going to do? Yeah, for me, not to get all prayer meeting Wednesday or anything, for me, it seems like that's sort of a slap in the face to God Almighty and his little boy Jesus. If you need a gun to give you the courage to go and worship the Almighty Creator of the whole consarnasted universe, and can't just trust the Creator to take care of you and accept the fact that if somebody does come in and shoot up the joint and the Creator doesn't save you, that the Creator obviously had it in for you and it was your turn by God. Well, I'd say there's just not a whole lot to your faith there, is there? Robert Jeffress, a disgusting bigot and a hustler and gospel sharp at the First Baptist Church of Dallas. He's an advisor to Comrade Kumquat, Man of Faith. He says a quarter to half of our members, and that's a huge church in Dallas, by the way, quarter to a half of the members are concealed carry. They have guns, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. They bring them into church with them. Yeah, well, wait till they start fumbling around for that nickel they're going to put in the collection plate and somebody gets plugged there, Pastor. Merciful God. Well, here's hoping they get better and they... And they're all patched up and able to enjoy the holiday season, and maybe somebody can talk him into letting some of the younger members of the congregation pick up the ordinance burden there at the church. This country. Yeesh. Now, when the shooting did start in Teleco Plains, witnesses said the whole church just panicked when the gun went off, and they thought there was an active shooter on the premises. The 911 dispatcher who answered the 911 call assumed the same. And so it took an hour for law enforcement to actually just figure out that an octogenarian, paranoid Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Pentecostal, whatever he was, Methodists, they were Methodists, had accidentally plugged himself and his beloved wife. One of these days that's going to happen. And some of the other good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals are going to pull out guns, and they're liable to wipe out the entire congregation. Because they'll just see another guy with a gun. Bang. Off to Jesus. And since it was Thursday yesterday, it also took... No kidding. In the hour it took for law enforcement to sort things out, the high school and hospitals nearby got locked down. I can't help thinking that there's just got to be a better way of going about this. Okay, so let's run up to Ohio, where there's an award out for most god-awful response to the Al Franken controversy. I guess I could use reverb for that, but no. It turns out, by the way, that the woman complaining of Al Franken's behavior, Lauren Tweeden, well, according to the photographer, if I've read these things correctly, she actually participated in staging the photograph. You know, the one where his hands are reaching out, and it doesn't look like his hands are actually on her, but they're certainly moving toward her. Yeah, she wasn't asleep, because that's what makes it look extra super-duper double-negative creepy. The idea that she was asleep and, you know, just taking a nap in a flak vest on a flight back from Afghanistan from a USO show. No, she was wide awake. And she had, in fact, participated in staging the photograph in which it was going to appear that she had passed out or something and Al Franken was going to revive her. Oddly enough, there hasn't been a lot of inquiry into the photographer who shot the photograph. Because insofar as Al Franken's two hands are in the photo, that would mean if he took the photograph himself, that would have meant he had to take it with his prehensile tail. And I've never known. Al Franken to be either a possum or a monkey. But somehow the for-profit media have just kind of blown by that today. But they didn't blow past Lauren Tweeden. Instead, the folks over at The View got Lauren Tweeden on the program, and as opposed to and I want to be clear, I'm not, because I've got a legal education, I tend to look at these things in those terms, or through that lens. And there's no way to judge all of these allegations, past, present, and future, at once. They have to be judged on a case-by-case basis, or else there's no way to determine the veracity of any given single accuser. And it doesn't matter what Lauren Tweeden's occupation was in 2006. The fact that there's a raft of photos of her in various and sundry states of undress does not mean that she gives up her right not to be groped. What does change it is if she participated in the photo and is then turning around and trying to use the photo that she participated in staging as a means, you get the idea. Now, in all of her photographs that I have seen, of course, she's not wearing spectacles. In most of the photographs I've seen, to be fair, she's not wearing much of anything at all. But that's okay. Leanne, not Lauren, Leanne Tweeden. But by the time they got her over onto the TV, they'd given her a pair of nerd glasses. And they invited her on The View to talk. And while she was talking to The View panel, she received a personal note that had been provided to her by Al Franken, and she read it on air. She said it's on Senate stationery, and it's real. And she then read it to the audience, and the audience clapped and cheered. Then this happened.
I have not even looked at Twitter because there are trolls out there. Yeah. I've heard things that's like you can't, right? I mean, there are already people that are like, "Oh, it's your fault. You're a model beforehand. Yeah. You were asking for it." I'm like, "Okay, I can't."
People always say things like that. You have to ignore that.
You do have to ignore that. I haven't seen anybody saying that she was asking for it. I haven't seen anybody asking how she was dressed. But what I'm not seeing anyone or hearing anyone doing is asking her if she participated in the staging of the photo. Because, well, I originally heard from our buddy Corey in the Free State of Louisville, who mentioned the fact that, and with a little note that said, context for the win, that she participated in staging the photograph. That goes to credibility. That goes to veracity. That goes to intent. That goes to whether or not Al Franken was doing something other than participating in a stupid, sophomoric photo stunt. But let's continue.
Exactly. So I'm not even looking. But, you know, that I think he's done some great work. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is not about donkeys and elephants.
It's not about donkeys and elephants. And I guess she does think he's done some great work. She's just never managed to mention any of the great work that he's done when she was guesting repeatedly with Sean Hannity. It's not about donkeys and elephants, she says. And yet we really don't know why it is that hours before the story broke, Roger Stone, confidant of Hannity, confidant of Steve Bannon, confidant of that website that rhymes with light and fart, bosom buddy of Alex Jones, knew it was coming. So, there's a little bit of a tinny ring to the idea that it wasn't about donkeys and elephants. Wasn't there?
This is about right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is about when you don't want somebody to put their hands on you, no is no.
Yes.
Don't when it's not wanted. This is not about.
Hey, but what about when you want the photograph taken and you collaborate in the taking of the photograph? Brother Deacon Asa says perhaps Al Franken had just taken Cha 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 Chicory before that photo. He may, in fact, have held the camera. No, he did not. Oh, stop that, Asa. Damn it. It's only 11 minutes to the end of the first hour. We can't get into the gutter that early. It did. What Corey sent me was a tweet of someone saying everybody was laughing and carrying on. Everyone, including, you know, Leanne Tweeden.
Like, you know, somebody, you know, I don't want men to be afraid to try to talk to women in a bar, because this is not what we're talking about. This is about forcibly pushing yourself on someone when they don't want you to.
They've indicated that they don't want you to.
It's about right. intent and consensual.
That's exactly
right. That's what
right.
it's about. So that's people exactly have to right. understand that.
People do. And so if you participate in the staging and the setup of the photo, doesn't that bring an issue of consent in? Now notice, I'm not sitting here saying anything about her character. I'm not. And I won't, and I wouldn't. But there has to be some yardstick for measuring credibility. Well, you're where I am. Steve in New York says, I have to confess, I feel very uncomfortable being too critical. The possible chilling effect about being too critical is really concerning to me. Are we holding ourselves, those on the left, to the same standard? You know what? Maybe this is a good way to look at it. Let me see if I can get something here. Hold on. I've got, I've got a clip here. I've got a clip here of a bit of a Donnybrook that transpired. Late last night, in the course of a Senate discussion of the great big whoppin' honkin' tax giveaway that the Republicans want to do for, you know, some of the richest people in the country, to the detriment of whatever happens to remain of the middle class. It is a, it's an exchange between Sherrod Brown, and I'm sorry, no disrespect to Senator Brown. I always laugh, or at least titter, when I say his name, because I remember back when he was new to the Senate, and Rush Limbaugh automatically assumed that he was a black person, my friend, a black person. Well, one of those. And referred to him as Sherrod Brown of Ohio. Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown is a senator from Ohio. He has progressive bona fides. I'm sure he lacks sufficient ideological purity for a number of real progressives. That's sarcasm. But he got into it with Orrin Hatch of Utah. And Orrin Hatch got real distraught. Orrin Hatch did. Because Sherrod Brown was making him eat the fact that he was advocating for a tax plan that would screw the middle class to the goddamn wall. And Orrin didn't like that. Behold, there's a point here, okay?
Groups will run, will of course say, Senator McCaskill and Senator Casey and Senator Stabenow and Senator Nelson are voting against a $4,000 raise that this tax cut is going to bestow on them. We know it's coming. We know you'll have way more money to promote that than we will have to defend it, but that's why the Wyden Amendment's so important. And I just think it would be nice just tonight before we go home to just acknowledge, well, this tax cut really is not for the middle class, it's for the rich. And that whole thing about higher wages, well, it's a good selling point. But we know companies don't just give away higher wages. They just don't give away higher wages just because they have more money. Corporations are sitting on a lot of money now. They're sitting on a lot of profits now. I don't see wages going up. So,
kind of making some pretty good points, isn't he? Think about all the money that's squirreled away by corporations. And, well, I mean, like, you know, take Walmart, for instance. I mean, Walmart has an ad running now with some smiling guy who's a personal shopper. That guy's making maybe 10 bucks an hour, and he is not allowed to get 40 hours a week. Walmart ain't exactly broke. The Walton heirs aren't eating beans and rice. So Sherrod Brown's point is well taken. Hoo-wee, but I tell you what, it gets Orrin Hatch into a high dudgeon.
Just spare us the bank shot, spare us the sarcasm and the satire, and let's
move. I'm going to spare it, but I'm going to just say to you that I come from the poor people.
Orrin Hatch comes from the poor people. You know, I mean, he's not like, you know, Willard Romney. Orrin Hatch comes from the poor people. You know, maybe Orrin Hatch was raised lower middle class back in Pittsburgh a thousand years ago. But Orrin Hatch hasn't been poor people since Roy Rogers and Dale Evans went off the air, okay?
And I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich.
Well, I'm sorry you resent it, Orrin. Poor little thing. Do you need a tissue? But he is honest in one regard. He has had a stinking career. He has never lifted his finger. That he wasn't doing it for some master of his that ain't from the 99%.
Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time, and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes...
You quit talking about Republicans giving tax cuts to the rich. It's not fair, because we don't want to hear you talking about us giving tax cuts to the rich when we give tax cuts to the rich. It gives us a sad...
So just, I'm not through.
Okay. He's not through, damn
it. I get
it.
Kind of sick and tired of it. True, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
it's not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people
regular
in the
order,
country,
Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Order.
And richer.
Order.
Kind of agree. I get sick of the richest people in this country getting richer and richer and richer. He apparently Sherrod Brown stuck the tip of the dirk into the pink and tender spot on Orrin Hatch. Oops.
We do a tax
cut. Regular order.
Middle class.
Regular order.
And over and over again. How many times do we do this before we learn this?
Yeah, he's got him a little hammer, and he's gonna use his gavel until Sherrod Brown shuts up and quits talking about Republicans giving tax cuts to the rich. Damn it!
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here.
Oh, allowing. Here's your Republican majority. They allow Democrats to speak. And when they speak and they're not obsequious enough to people like Orrin Hatch, they're spouting off. Yep. Wait a minute. I think we've got something that works for this. There it is.
You dick!
There it is. Uh-huh. Allowing. Gee, I thought they debated things in the Senate. Let's go back.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes it.
Just, I'm not through. Okay. I get kind of sick and tired of it. True, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
it's not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular order, Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Order.
And richer.
Order.
Regular order. Middle. We do attack
regular order.
Middle class.
Wait a minute. I'm
regular
over
order.
And over and over again.
Wait just
how many
a
times do we do this before we learn this?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything.
He's like one syllable away from starting into the Monty Python Yorkshireman skit.
We lived in a cardboard box.
So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap. And let me just say something. If we worked together, we could pull this country out of every mess it's in. And we could do a lot of the things that you're talking about, too. And I think I've got a reputation of having worked together with Democrats.
Let's start with Chip.
Oh!
Starting with Chip.
Zing.
I've done it for years. I've got more bills.
Start with Chip today.
I got more bills passed than everybody on this committee put together.
Yeah, and most of them are bills designed to, you know, polish up the nether parts of the wealthiest people in this country. That's why he's a Republican. As Orrin likes to say, give me a break!
And they've been passed for the benefit of people in this country.
But did you notice? Did you notice? Let's start with Chip. Let's do it right now. We're not going to do Chip. Fuck those little kids. Because it's been since September 30th. It's the 17th of November now. And the Republican majority in neither house has moved to do a goddamn thing about the Children's Health Insurance Program. Not a thing.
Say, as I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bullcrap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right.
Not right. Yeah, I know. It was not right. You're being mean to me. You're telling the truth on me, damn it. Well, here's the thing about Orrin Hatch, and there was a reason I played that. He is, always has been, and always will be, a lickspittle for the wealth class in this country. And I guess that's just how, I guess that's what the people of Utah want to send to Washington, a lickspittle for the wealth class. He can't be counted on to protect the environment in Utah. He can't be counted on to protect the children of Utah and make sure that they have health insurance coverage. He can't be counted on not to put the shiv to the middle class in Utah. All he can be counted on is to be a lickspittle to the wealth class. But here's the thing. And this is the real legacy of Orrin Hatch. And this is why I played this clip. I believe Leanne Tweed. I'm starting from a position of she's telling the truth. There's nothing special or cruel about testing the veracity of her assertions. That's the only way we can know when people are telling the truth and when they are not. It is the foundation of our entire legal system. And to the extent that there's not going to be any legal action, the only people who can test her veracity are, unfortunately, the for-profit media. But I, from a departure point, I believe her. Years ago now, in a bygone time, a woman bravely and boldly stepped forward and told the Senate of the United States that she as a young lawyer, had been sexually harassed repeatedly. And she gave detail. She gave detail that provided so much context that there was no way that what she said wasn't true. And it was a grave matter, too, because it involved the question of whether or not an individual would be elevated to the Supreme Court of the United States. But Orrin Hatch did everything in his power to slime her. He sleazed all over her. He dug and he dug and he twisted and he machinated to try to destroy not only the credibility, but the very life of this woman. There were lurid stories of pubic hairs on coffee cans or Coke cans, and a predilection for watching porn, and untoward remarks by that nominee. And that nominee was Clarence Thomas. And the woman was Anita Hill. And the way that Anita Hill was treated stands to this day as a monument to the perfidy of the Republican Party, and in particular of Orrin Hatch. I still believe Anita Hill. And Orrin Hatch still does not. And frankly, I don't care how many goddamn bills Orrin Hatch has gotten through the Senate. The only thing that needs to go on his tombstone when he goes to his long home is Orrin G. Hatch. Born, died, didn't believe Anita Hill. And that in a nutshell is all the difference in the world. I've got a note here from Carol. She says, I'm only going to say this about Al Franken. I think posing for that kind of photo is in bad judgment. I won't defend that. I will say that I'm a woman working in a man's world, and the way to be accepted is to be one of the boys sometimes. That means these men sometimes say things I wouldn't accept from other men or touch me in ways I wouldn't accept from other men. I don't go tits up just because I get pissed off at one of them occasionally. That's a big difference between the times I've been behind closed doors with men who had power over me, who felt they could take the same liberties and did. The fact that her release of this information on Al Franken didn't come over the past few years, but was coordinated with her radio station and some of her conservative friends. When she tells me it's not about donkeys and elephants, I can only say, fuck you. Her timing is suspect. If she thought this information was worthy of being released, I'm thinking when he was running for office would have been the right time. And Carol, and Carol's got a great point there. Al Franken only, after a massive recount in 2008, it was finished in 2009, Al Franken only became senator as a result of a small handful, you know, less than 100, I think, votes. She could have put that to real use then. On the other hand, Carol continues, little girls who were abused by statutory Roy didn't have power to come after him when he was a sitting DA, or God knows when he was the circuit judge. They were children. I've been attacked by a lot of women today for holding these beliefs. Monica Lewinsky stalked Bill Clinton, and she wasn't a child. I won't defend his behavior because I thought it wasn't worthy of the office. I don't think a consensual blowjob is impeachment worthy either, though. I think that is a fair, earnest, and honest assessment of the situation. Dumb, stupid, sophomoric photo from someone with a long professional history of doing dumb, stupid, sophomoric things. This has not, however, been his behavior upon entering the Senate. In point of fact, after Al Franken became senator, he laid low. He didn't do interviews outside Minnesota. He made it abundantly clear that Minnesota was going to be the be-all and end-all of his senatorial career. And only in this second term has he become, having studied and learned and listened, has he become a force to be reckoned with on, for instance, the Judiciary Committee, where he's done a better job cross-examining the likes of Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions, the Hood, than just about any other member of that panel. Meanwhile, Arnold says, I think the Franken thing is a witch hunt. He's by no means an angel. I'm sure he's guilty of all kinds of inappropriate stuff. He's from that generation. However, it is not pedophilia. It is not the stalking of minors. It was likely a bunch of talent hanging out, having fun, inappropriate things happen. I don't want to be held responsible for everything I've done in hangout mode. I understand that. And that's, you know, that's part of the introspection that's going on. But if somehow or another we don't test the credibility and the veracity, if we don't judge these things on a case-by-case ad hoc basis, then how else do we do it? As Carol notes, former members of Franken's staff say they were always treated with the utmost respect. And as we prepare, Sparky is in the ready to roll with the extraordinary ordinary roundtable. If you've never participated in Friday on the front porch, you are more than you're more than welcome so to do, and in fact I encourage you and invite you. Just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, all one word, on Skype. Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail and shine the bob signal on the clouds, and before you know it, you'll be participating in our rollicking, freewheeling discussion that takes place every Friday evening. A couple of emails. Okay, Snopes is saying the image was staged, claim by the photographer is false. Thank you for that. I'd still like to know who took the photo. And with that, one last story, and then we'll get the conversation going. I guess it doesn't seem like much in the grand scheme of things, but it made me sick at my stomach when I saw this story. It was the Department of Interior and Ryan Shrinky Zinke, who wants to shrink national monuments like Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears National Monument, so that they can be blasted and gouged and scraped and tormented and drilled and mined, and do absolutely nothing for the national energy security of the United States, but rather merely generate profits for hydrocarbon executives. It won't do a goddamn thing for the U.S., just like mountaintop removal. Shrinky Zinky was the guy who put the kibosh on the health review related to mountaintop removal in Appalachia. Well, his Interior Department is apparently trying to one-up itself from week to week with outrageous behavior. And this one is a Lulu. The United States Fish and Wildlife Service, which is a branch of the Department of the Interior, in the ongoing practice of trying to undo everything that the Obama administration did, because Kenyan Muslin, you slurper, has reversed an Obama administration policy to not allow the importation into this country of elephant trophies from Zimbabwe and Zambia. There's massive corruption in Zimbabwe and Zambia in the elephant trade. And as a matter of fact, the United States have listed African elephants on the Federal Endangered Species Act. You can only import a hunting trophy from Zimbabwe or Zambia if you can demonstrate that killing the elephant positively enhanced the survival of the species, which would seem to me rather a tall standard to meet. It's an endangered species, so I killed one, and now the species is better off. Huh? Elephant poaching, the illegal export of ivory tusks, all of that takes place in Zimbabwe and Zambia. The elephant population is on the decline. And, you know, call me a romantic, but I think a planet that still has elephants on it is probably a better planet. But nonetheless, the elephant population's gone down 6% in Zimbabwe since 2001. And trophy hunting is on the rise. But now, the administration of Tangerine Tiberius is going to allow those trophies into the United States, as announced by Safari International. Now, knowing the photographs we've seen in the past, is it going to be a surprise to anybody when sometime over the holidays, maybe, we see a picture of Udi and Cootie, you know, Don Jr. and Eric, posing next to an elephant that they've blown away? It's more than a philosophical difference or a political difference or an ideological difference. This is just obscene. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that Marcus Aurelius wants to hang an elephant's head in the Oval Office?
Well, a symbol of the Republican Party is an elephant. We need an elephant here.
Jesus. I mean, nobody will take that bet, will they? Because you know that photograph of Udi and Cootie is going to show up sooner rather than later. I'll bet you they're goddamn itching to get them an elephant. Wow. So that's it. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We started the program with $401 to go in fundraising. And, you know, we still have $401 to go in fundraising. it would be great if we didn't finish the program that way simply because we've got a shortened broadcast week next week. And it would kind of suck to start Moran Monday in a $600 hole. Hopefully we won't. Darlene, if you're listening, Jug-a-Punch told me that your book will be on the way to you. The Trials of a Scold, the incredible true story of writer Ann Royal, new out from Jeff Biggers. Enjoy it. In fact, let me know what you think. So, yeah, we'll take a break, fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and see what's on everybody's mind. Shall we? Do. Let's. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Very, very, very long time ago, Bob Geldof and the Boomtown Rats and the Elephant's Graveyard, perfect bumper, I thought. And I just, I love that repeated refrain. They're guilty till proven guilty. Has there ever been a better song? It's a long-distance dedication going out to Udi and Cootie Trump. That's right. Guilty till proven guilty. Shame, shame. Shame, shame. From the Horn. Let's go over and check in with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And Sparky,
Hey, Sparky, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine up here in beautiful Tehama County today.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Tehama County. I'll never forget it again. Or I'll never mispronounce it again. I hadn't forgotten it. I just didn't know.
Hey, I know where you might be able to buy a cheap house out here.
Oh, yeah?
Up there in Rancho Tehama. Only one problem, it's got a big hole in the floor.
Yeah, it's a little more home improvement than I want, and having to bring in the exorcist to get the evil spirits out would probably be pretty pricey too.
You could always make some money off of that property by, like, you know, hosting murderabilia, like tours through it and stuff, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I've got the capitalist instincts for that.
that's bad.
Well, that area was settled when the great L.A. and Bay Area migration started back in the 70s. I mean, somebody started a housing development out there, and then it expanded. It was fairly built out by the 80s or 90s. But it sits right at the foothills of the... Well, you consider it before the Coast Range, it's on the west side.
Oh, so is it wetter than what you get, or I mean?
No, probably not. But it's just out of the way place. It takes you. Oh, a plane just flying over. About 20 minutes from either Red Bluff or Corning to get there, or so. And it's all country road.
And what's drive time down to the Bay Area?
Well, about 2.5 hours to Vallejo. And it may take, you know,
I'm just thinking in terms of how long it'll take before Google urban sprawls up to there, and the property values go absolutely insane.
Oh, it'll take a long time. It's all down the valley. There's nothing. Down along the foothills over there. I mean,
so not to get too personal, you got a clean bill of health from the checkup, Sparky?
Yeah, and I got my flu shot, and I got my second pneumonia shot.
Well, you're set.
The one I won't have to have another pneumonia shot for 5 years. The one I got last year was the kind of the A shot. That's good for life or something, she said. Then you had to have this B shot now, so and go 5 years and get it again. And my Cologuard test was negative. If you've ever heard of that.
I see an ad for it every morning. There's a little smiling colon on the box.
Yeah.
Well, I got a nice note from Darlene a moment ago. She said, looking forward to reading Jeff's book, and thank you for speaking out for the elephants. They're my favorite animal, as anyone who steps into my home would see, as I have over 100 elephant figurines and a stained glass window depicting 3 of those majestic creatures under a tree on the savannah. They are a keystone species, and their extinction is too horrific and upsetting to contemplate. I feel the same way. Them and the great big whales. And, well, you know, it may be if Udi and Cootie go over there, maybe they can bring back a giraffe because I'm kind of fond of giraffes. I think they're elegant and lovely. And maybe they can bring one of those back for Ivanka. And after, you know, now that it's legal and everything, after they're done with that, maybe Udi and Cootie can go up and club baby seals. I mean, are these the tackiest, most disgusting, most venal, pissant bunch of God? What are you gonna do? I'd call them hillbillies, but we've got more self respect than that. Yeah, these. Oh, Jesus! But you know. That's just,
you know, regular deer hunting and stuff is for the lower classes.
Well, yeah, the lower class who can afford all the gear and everything, I guess. Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, deer hunting is no cheap endeavor. You know, $1,000 for a rifle or $500 for a rifle, .30-06, and a halfway decent scope, and then you got the gear, and you got to buy your Blaze Orange, and whew, gets pricey in a hurry.
And tags.
And that, of course, that all begins. Oh Jesus, that begins this Monday, and over where we're going to do Thanksgiving, it'll sound like a war. Because it's fairly close to the Ohio River. It's one county away. And I think it's still this way. In Ohio, you cannot hunt deer with rifle guns. You gotta hunt them with a shotgun and pumpkin balls. So we get a lot of Ohioans coming over to hunt in West Virginia. And long about dawn, just as the sun begins to creep up above the horizon and the na 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 bam 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 bam. Yeah, it'll. I mean, people put Blaze Orange vests on their larger dogs lest hunters mistake them for short deer. That's not a joke.
Yeah, I can see that, especially with a black, if you have a black dog.
Yeah, or a brown one, or a gray one, or a four-legged one. No, it gets crazy. People get buck fever.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be some of that over here too, but it's a lot more profound over there for some reason. Probably because there's a lot more woodland and a lot more farm space. As Arthur points out, yeah, but deer's not a rare species, so what's the fun in that? You want to be the person to shoot the last member of the species right in one eye. That sounds so Trumpian. But that's just me. Anything else on anybody's minds? Billable Rick, you chimed in a little bit ago.
Yeah, and I sort of made a bad joke about the house in Tehama County that's for sale or whatever, you know. But
it was a bad joke.
Yeah, that was a bad joke. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll wait for the concert report till later. I'm going to see Al Stewart tomorrow night, as you might know. But I think this whole sexual harassment thing, I think the timing of it is just too suggestive of a Republican plant story. Not to say that, you know, the lady might.
Why did Roger Stone know in advance?
Exactly. So it's like a coordinated thing. And I think they see, I think they're trying to throw Roy Moore a lifeline. Because he's their kind of candidate, you know, the light fart, you know, type of Republicans, you know, if you want to call them that. I call them more Nazis than anything else. But, you know, they love the guy, you know, and it's kind of become a personal, it's become a proxy war between McConnell and Bannon, you know, this whole, you know, Roy Moore, you know, nomination now and candidacy for the Alabama Stan U.S. Senate seat. I can only, you know, think that was done, you know, because of all the drip of these allegations, these new women who kept coming out, you know, saying that, you know, Roy Moore, you know, mall rat extraordinaire, you know, had harassed them years ago and, you know, and that they, you know, you know, they were basically saying me too, because this happened to me as well, you know. And I do take some solace in the fact that there was a poll that just came out by Fox News, of all things, which shows Doug Jones, like, leading 50-42 among Alabama voters.
Yeah, with 9% undecided and a margin of error of you know, whatever, 4 or 5 points.
3 points. Yeah. But I mean, the fact that they're undecided tells me that, you know, they're questioning whether they should go for more, you know? So, you know, he's probably going to, you know, I mean, if the race were held today, if the election were held today, he could lose. But again, a lot can happen. And I mean, never underestimate the stupidity of the Alabama stand voters, you know?
In point of fact, I have evidence of same, if you would care to hear it.
Please.
There was a big rally. Big rally today for, well, I mean, not big, but there was a rally today for Roy, statutory Roy. And it was a women's rally.
Ah.
And so NBC had a reporter on the scene. Here's the fun part, and it just says, he just says, you know, they're rallying on the steps of the Alabama State Capitol. And most people, not knowing the history of the place, so they were rallying, just so we know what it means when we say the steps of the Alabama State Capitol, they were, and there's still a star, I think, in the portico area there, where Jefferson Davis took the oath of office as president of the Confederacy. They still commemorate that. So these women were rallying for Roy Moore near where Jefferson Davis took the oath of office to be president of the Confederacy, and in conjunction with the fact that Roy Moore previously said that all of our problems stem from two things, that in 1962 they took prayer out of schools, and in 1965, we gave way too many rights. Now, what rights?
To those people, of course, right?
Well, I mean, the those people part is taken as read.
Right.
Yeah. Steve, by the way, notes, don't believe that poll. I understand. So anyway, the reporter on the ground found himself a Moore voter who attended the Women for Moore rally there. MSNBC reporter Vaughn Hilliard. And this is what transpired, and I'm going to presume that you can hear it.
Hey, good morning, you guys. Yeah, we're here on the State House Capitol steps here in Montgomery, where there's about 30 women here for a Women for Moore rally. Kayla Moore, the wife of Roy Moore, is expected to speak shortly. Roy Moore himself is not expected to attend. But I want to bring in here Martha Shiver. She's one of the women here. You drove in town. You can step in, Martha, here. I want to ask you, why are you here this morning for Roy Moore?
Well, I want to let him know we're 100% behind him. We believe in him, and we just don't really believe in all the slander that is going on. And we want him to know that we're 100% behind him.
Oh, of course, it's only slander if it's not true.
I want to ask you, these 9 women have very specific allegations. I want to ask you, number one, do you believe those women? But also, number two, there's talk of that, you know, maybe a couple decades ago it was more normal for a man, an older man, to date younger women. Is that the case, and do you think that if he engaged in these behaviors that that was acceptable?
I think at a young age she may have pushed the issue, and she got probably rejected, and now she's saying something that really I don't happen.
Now, that's an interesting spin. She, the 14-year-old, went after statutory Roy, and statutory Roy turned her down by taking off his clothes and rubbing his penis against her through his tidy whities.
Do you think that these women are telling the truth?
I think that they're out for money. I think they've been pushed by the other people to say things that is not true.
They're doing it for the money. I guess that's the money that Bernstein, Jewy guy, is out there paying.
I thought that was Jewy Jewin.
Who are these other people?
I wouldn't really like to say that on TV.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that on TV because I don't really know, and I believe it. You know, kind of like I believe in my religion, and I believe in Roy Moore. I just wouldn't like to say that on TV because, well, it's all made up in my own mind.
Sure. So you think that...
But I think, really, Luther Strange is probably behind a lot of this. Yeah. I really don't trust him, and I just don't trust him.
You believe Roy Moore?
I believe Roy Moore yeah. all the way, 100%.
Yeah. Tell me about this event. What is the importance of this event that is taking place behind us here?
We are saying a prayer today, and we are letting him know that this group of people is all for him, and that we're 100% behind him.
You've known Roy Moore for how many years?
Probably 10 or 12 years.
10 or 12 years.
Or more.
We're going to let you go. Kayla Moore is about to speak. We thank you, Martha.
I've known him for about 10 or 12 years, and he never took his pants off and rubbed his... he never rubbed himself against me, and his withered old member never jumped like a snake in a microwave around me.
Wrong accent for me, who always does the... Well, it's Friday. What can I say? I'm sorry, you were saying something, Sparky?
Nah, Bob, that was me. It sounds like one of the blue-haired ladies that makes your banana pudding on Wednesday nights. Are you sure it wasn't her?
She bears a strong resemblance, Steve. She kind of does. And
is she from, like, Bumfuck Falls, Alabama, or what?
No, she's from Busted Knuckle, Alabama.
Oh, okay.
But they'll cross over to West Virginia occasionally. They don't mind taking a ride. Hell, they ain't got nothing but time on their hands, so maybe that's why
It's telling that they couldn't scrounge up more than 30 women for the Women for Roy rally. Lot of extra room there on the Alabama State House steps there on Goat Hill.
It's not exactly the million women's march like that we had after, you know, the Pumpkin Fuhrer took the oath of office, you know.
It was a stage press event. It wasn't a rally.
Yeah, of course.
Wait a minute. I got a cowbell for Carol. Carol noting, she doesn't sound like a nubile 14-year-old, but I could be wrong. really, Carol? What's the giveaway? The gravelly Chesterfield voice? The just the inherent crotchetiness? I don't know, but well, you're right, Carol. You win. You win this evening's free month's supply of cha-cha-cha chicory. Because I'm guessing maybe 72, 75. Hard to tell at that age. Hard to tell.
That's not exactly, yeah, it's definitely not Roy's demographic, you know, his target demographic, which is what, about 13 to maybe 18 at the oldest, you know, if that?
18's over the hill with Roy.
Yeah, 16, 13 to 16, or 12 to 16, right?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah.
From first training bra to first... big girl's bra. That's Roy Moore territory. That's just disgusting. You know that? It is. Although there, you know, some of the damnedest things are happening. Over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, one of those morning guys over there said he would, if Roy Moore had come to try to date his daughter, he would, and this is a quote, kick him in the head. And that was kind of a wow. So, I got some other fun sound real quick. You know how, remember how Jerry Jones said that he'd, by God, fire anybody that didn't stand for the national anthem? Well,
yeah.
Somebody ran into Jerry out in public, and they asked Jerry if he would, if the guy said he was just wanted to shoot a video, and would Jerry please, because, you know, big Cowboys fan and everything, would Jerry please give a congratulations message to his bride to be on the video. This all took place at the Warwick Melrose Hotel in Dallas, and of course she's a football fan and everything. And this is what transpired. You might want to get the hockey puck.
And Jennifer, congratulations on the winning. Wedding. Now, you know he's with a black girl tonight, don't you?
Close mouth. Right here, Jerry.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He's one creepy old billionaire.
does one have to say creepy before billionaire? I mean, I don't know anymore.
I think he's a friend of Roy Moore's myself.
Well, it kind of depends on no, I'm just not going there, but Jesus Christ. And the camera pans over. And there's a guy there who's sort of laughing really not comfortably because he's a black guy. You know he's with a black girl tonight, don't you? Dreaming of the old days down at the quarters there, are you, Jerry?
And he's on record of loving them titty bars.
Wait, who said titty bar?
Guilty.
Oh God!
Aren't they big time down in Texas?
Yes, and he's on record of loving them.
The bars?
Yes. Yeah. He loving them titty bars, and I mean any disrespect to all our classy lady listeners out there. It's just it is what it is, you know.
It is what it is. Yes. 14 minutes before the hour, and we've tried to shift into the gutter a couple of times, but we've managed not to. And I'm just proud. So I mean, I kind of extended the filibobster this evening. Anything on anybody's mind?
We could shift back into. I've seen the Gordo commercial again today. It won't go away.
what the hell is Gordo?
It's a dog, and it's an air freshener commercial, and Bob and I were gooning on this thing 6 months ago, and I couldn't believe that they showed it again today. Here Gordo was rubbing his junk all over this couch, and they were advertising air freshener.
Oh, yeah, you need that.
Yeah, you got to have it.
Gordo!
you should have seen the look on Grady's face when I sprayed his bed with air freshener.
The hell are you doing, man? I had it just right.
Oh, comfortable living room couch, you give us a lot of things, but we give you feet, back sweat, and Gordo gives you all his junk. Old comfortable couch. You stink, you know.
What is that, a Febreze commercial?
Yes. Yes, and they have one, and they still run it, too, about the guest bathroom in the basement. It still runs. And
they're still running that ad with that poor woman who goes to the shrink by sitting down on a couch in the middle of traffic in Times Square. So ad contracts are ad contracts, I guess. What a racket that is. $35 a week to text to a therapist. And I love the testimonial that goes with it.
Oh yeah.
She helps me to think only in the best ways. The hell is that?
Compared to what?
Hey, there's not Gordo. There's Grady. Yeah, that's definitely Grady.
Oh,
that's
you're a nice doggy, Grady.
Yeah, that's no Gordo.
Nice doggy.
He's up on the table. He looks me right in the eyes when he's up there. He's staring at the horse feeding at the back fence, I think, or something.
But, you know, Bob, I have all my notes and everything, and you guys just stole my thunder, so... I really don't have anything to bring to this. I mean, Miss Carroll was so eloquent with her presentation about the Leon Tweeden thing that there's no way I could top that. I'm not even going to go there, you know. Well, the Orrin Hatch, Sherrod Brown meltdown, you nailed it in the filibuster. So, you know, there's no reason for me to even go there.
I think with the current climate, it's about time somebody asks Orrin Hatch straight up. So, given that, you know, we believe women who... do you believe Anita Hill now? I mean, everybody deserves a shot at redemption.
Oh, I always believed her.
I did too, but Orrin Hatch slimed all over her. And he's getting ready. He's getting ready to retire from the Senate in, what, 2020? Or won't run in 18... whatever. And I think it's time for him to wear that again for a while. The hell?
Hello?
Wait, what the hell happened here? Hey, Steve, I don't know what happened, but somehow or another, you're on the wrong line. You gotta. I don't know. Okay. Are you guys there?
Stinking job for so many years now. I'm thinking, stinking job, hell, it's made you rich.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Steve, if you're listening, you gotta reach out to Sparky.
Because... Wait a minute, I'm trying to find him.
It's not me, Bob. Somebody's calling.
No, it's Steve in New York.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to add him to the right group now.
Okay.
But I did want to comment on the Leon tweeting thing and how it was so contrived, and I wanted to get Philip O'Rick on this, because anytime you do, you know, a civil case, they always bring in character background, and I knew last night all you had to do was Google her, and to me, you've seen all that you knew, and I know, Bob, if it was their daughter, if she wanted to pose in Playboy, God bless her, and I would feel the same way, okay? But still, the background, and she was doing, which was a notch below.
It's not that spoke beyond. It's not the posing. It's not the model work. It's not any of that. It's the fact that she's bosom buddies with Sean fucking Hannity.
Exactly.
It's the fact. Exactly. It's the fact that. Roger Stone knew this was going to happen before it happened. It's the fact that, oh my God, Donald Trump jumped on it and tweeted like a son of a bitch over it, while at the same time saying nothing about Roy Moore and serving to remind everybody of how many times he's been sued for sexual harassment.
And what happened 48 hours ago, Hannity was losing sponsors left and right. So they had to pull a rabbit out of their ass somehow, some way, to try to create some kind of equivalency. And this, she came along, and this was a godsend. And look, she's been all over The View. I mean, her name is out there now for people that I never heard of her before until today. Wow. So,
I want to be clear. The photographer who took that photo has not come forward. And that's the only person who can really speak to the situation.
Well, Bob, I think that's why Al Franken was so quick to say, let's have an open investigation. He's not a stupid man, and he probably knows the whole story. And if you get these people under the oath, and the photographer and everything, then you'll hear, as Paul Harvey would say, The rest of the story.
Yeah. Well, here's a lot
of other people on that tour, you know.
Yep, exactly.
Here's another wrinkle too. Now, all of this happened when Al Franken was not a senator.
2006.
Republicans don't. I mean, they think strategically. So if anybody says, well, you know, he wasn't even a senator, why would an ethics investigation matter? Then the automatic answer by the Republicans is precisely. So what does it matter if Roy Moore really did sexually abuse a 14-year-old. See how they think?
Exactly, and you know, I think another thing we have to remember is this: this accuser, this harassment accuser against Franken, is clearly a Trumpanzee. She's been on, you know, the Hannity show a number of times. She's praised Chris Christie, even though that guy's a freaking bully. And so, you know, this, like, you know, she's totally okay with Christie, like, you know, yelling at a woman who just asked him where he sent his kids to school, you know. And you know, here she is, like, you know, getting all out of, bent out of shape about, like, a tongue kiss, you know. So you just have to question her, you know, her motives.
And at this point going forward, it's all win-win for her. Go ahead, Steve. Go ahead. Take it,
man. You know,
go,
what? I'm going to be honest with you. We're getting awfully close to the line of hypocrisy here. And I don't mean to be the skunk at the picnic. But the woman who came out, the one woman who came out against Roy Moore was also a Trumpanzee. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm getting very, you know, and who the hell am I? I'm getting very uncomfortable with this criticism of her. This just, this, everything I'm hearing sounds an awful lot like, well, she had it coming because of what she was wearing.
Well, if that is what I've conveyed, Steve, it is not what I intended to convey, as I've said all along.
I believe her. I believe her too. And rather than focusing on all this conspiracy stuff about what she did and what she said, I think the real issue is to focus on the contrast between Franken's reaction and Roy Moore's and the Geo Fuck's reaction. That's where I think our focus should be, because that's where the real contrast is. And that's how we make sure that we don't denigrate the woman who reported this, and we don't serve as causing a chilling effect of women coming forward.
Right, and I think that is borne out. For instance, that's why I raised the Anita Hill issue with Orrin Hatch. It's borne out in that. No one is treating Leanne Tweeden like Anita Hill was treated. Not by a long damn shot. And I'm not going to buy into the idea that, well, it was a different time then. It wasn't 100 years ago, okay? It was, what, 25 years ago? 30 years ago?
30, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
but
not...
Let me ask my friend concern. Steve. I do, but let me ask you, my friend, don't you find the timing just a bit suspect?
Well, to be honest with you, I said the same thing about the Roy Moore stuff. And Bob made the point. He said, believe them. I'm less concerned about the timing as I am about the fact that she reported it. And look, there's a picture. Al has said he apologized for it. So I think whether or not it happened, we need to assume that it did.
Right. But if it comes down the road that she was complicit in this picture, that changes everything.
But we're not going to know that. Yeah. We're not going to know that because the photographer has not come forward. Let me ask you, Steve and Rick, since you're the your house counsel. Y'all are in the business, in the kind of a business where the credibility of witnesses and accusers has to be tested. Now, in a situation in which there's not going to be any legal action, any courtroom action, there's not going to be any jury, there's not going to be any judge, do we just say, well, in that case, we won't test credibility?
In this case, because this is not a legal issue, it's purely 100% a political issue. I think what needs to happen is exactly what Al did. You don't question her credibility. You don't question her veracity. What you do is let the way you react to it be the measurement of how the measurement of your character. That's the real contrast here. The real contrast is how Al handled it versus how Roy Atola Moore did, and how that piece of shit in the White House did. That's the contrast here. Forget about questioning her credibility. Forget about it. You're never going to win.
Well, yeah, well, and that's probably true. That's probably true, but I think credibility, you know, in my mind is always an issue, even in the so-called court of public opinion, you know? You know, you either believe her or you don't believe her. I mean, I'm sort of agnostic at this point. I don't really know for sure, although I think something happened. I don't know exactly, you know, whose version, you know, is correct. But what gives me pause is that on November 16th at like 10:15 p.m., just before, you know, day before this news dropped, there was a reference to a tweet that apparently Roger Stone had posted about, you know, Franken is next in the barrel. And that is precisely the same language he used just before all of the Podesta hacked emails were released by WikiLeaks. You know, exactly. That Podesta is the next in the barrel. And
these
I don't think that's too coincidental.
These people,
you know,
are so fucking stupid they can't get out of their way.
It doesn't matter. Don't you get that? It doesn't matter. Politics is about perception. There's a picture. Period.
Well, that's true. There's a photograph.
Effectively, what was the what's the effect of this? Well, like I said, I don't think this is going to eliminate him from the Senate from Minnesota.
No, of course not.
But it has
particularly in light of the schmuck in the White House.
But it has taken a particularly effective it's removed one potential contender from the 2020 White House race.
Who?
Franken.
Bob, Franken was never in the running for the White House. He's probably the wrong religion, man.
Well, he is, yeah, but there's also the vice presidential slot as well. And also the fact that he will come, see, he could have been available because he won't have to run for re-election until, what, 2022, I think?
Did he run in 2016?
No.
I don't remember.
Let's see, 8-6 is 14.
2014.
Yeah, 2014. So he'd have to
2024.
Run. He'd have to run in 2020. So he's probably not going to give up his seat for that anyway. If we're going to say this is a political matter, then the question we have to answer is, does this make him become timid in his examinations of, say, the perjury of Jefferson Davis, Beauregard, Sessions III?
I don't think we have to worry about that.
Well, I don't either, because he came forward and was a truth teller. He got caught and he admitted it. Let me go over to a comment from Carol. She says, "I never said I didn't believe Leanne Tweeden. I questioned her timing. And this is a grown-ass woman versus children story. Grown woman, Leanne Tweeden. Children, Roy Moore." And so I think Carol's saying the same thing you are, Steve, namely
exactly
that's the inquiry. That is the inquiry. Now, if you want to take it one step further, if this is the best that the Republicans had, then they ain't got much.
You know what?
And they're desperate
for
a pelt to put on the wall.
Right, and it doesn't matter, because the folks out in the hinterlands only look at this as, well, both sides do it. And to be honest with you, this is another example of how good the Republicans are at politics.
Well, I'm sure, I'm sure they worked hammer and tongs to try to find somebody to mitigate this damage. They couldn't just sit around and let themselves be turned into, because see, they recognize the possibility that Roy Moore may win, and then they're going to be hard pressed to have the stomach to expel him from the Senate, and so they were in a position where they were dealing with the very real possibility that they would become the party of the child molester, that it would be by default, by the way, it was presented, since they were so wishy-washy and slow to the game in getting themselves away from Roy Moore, that Roy Moore would become the face of the GOP.
I understand. All I'm saying is that I don't, you know what, frankly, I don't care about the legal issues here. I don't care. Care about is the politics. And the politics, as it pertains to Al, is his reaction to it. Take her off the table. Just acknowledge it. It happened. Take her off the table, and then focus on the contrast between how he handled it and how shitbag and Al, you know what, and I hate to say that, but I just can't even say their names. How he handled it. And point out time and time again, pound it into people about Trump. Really? Trump? And the thing about Trump that the Democrats need to start exploiting is that there are not accusations. We have, forget about the accusations of the women.
We've got it on tape.
We've got him admitting stuff on tape. Forget about, you know what? I'm not saying forget about the women, because I believe them. The guy's a pig. We've got stuff on tape. And every time a Democrat goes on, every time a liberal goes on anywhere, they need to be pounding into the people. Really, Donald Trump, the man who
admitted. And he was still elected, though, Steve. He was still elected despite the, you know, those.
I understand.
You know,
the way it's looking, roughly the same number of Republicans in Alabama are standing with Roy Moore as nationally continue to look away from what Donald Trump did. Another note coming from Carol. As a woman, it matters to me, she says. Not just his reaction, but the facts.
And I agree 100%. But again, I'm looking at it from the politics. I'm looking at it from the politics.
Oh, and hey, let me just interrupt for a minute. I'm not trying to kill the momentum of the conversation, but we got 53 minutes left in the program. We started with $401 in fundraising to go, and we are still at $401 in fundraising to go. So we've got 53 minutes to at least hopefully reduce that a little bit.
Bob, I wanted to address that. I've been struggling here. We just, my partner and I.
Don't make any apologies, Steve. It's okay, man. No.
What I was going to say is we just settled a big case, so there will be the intention is to have some money flowing into the horn. It's been a while since I've been able to, so.
Thank you.
I haven't had much good news in the last few months, and that was some really good news.
Well, you remind me, that is good news. I'm proud for you, and I'm proud. I'm proud for your client. you remind me of it sounds like that one scene of Duck Drake Private Eye, where he says, "I just finished my old case," and he carries an empty case of beer bottles to the window and throws it out and says, "I needed a new case."
Right. And the best part is we didn't even have to go to litigation, as we put together a really, really good case explaining to our adversaries, who was a company based in somewhere in the South. But one of my adversaries was in Tennessee and one was in South Carolina. And I explained to them, well, here's your exposure if you come to New York in your legal fees alone, to which she responded, "Wow, wish I could earn that kind of money." At which point I knew that I had her by the, well, never mind. I had her over.
You had her by the, you had her by the briefs.
Yes.
Legal briefs.
Yes. So, I would like to make to talk about something completely off the subject.
Do please.
And it's, okay. I wanted to talk about, and I'm saying this given my background in finance and economics, about this tax thing. And I don't see many people who know how to adequately respond to this. And this notion that by cutting the tax rate, that somehow gives a company more money to quote unquote invest in / hire additional people. And I wanted to explain why actually how we need to be arguing is, in point of fact, raising the tax rate would make businesses invest in employers and employees, and here's why. In order to reduce a company's tax burden, it needs to increase or decrease its income, and the way it does that is by increasing its costs. So when the taxes are high, the way a company increases its costs, which causes a requisite decrease in income, is to hire more people. Ergo, a higher tax rate means, how do I decrease my tax burden? Ah, I hire more people. And I just wanted to say that. So if anybody wants to argue with the likes of Orrin Hatch and his brother Anal, that's how you argue it. That's how you argue it.
Well, but what impact does that have on the CEO's ability to give himself a sufficient bonus at the end of the year to buy a 24-karat gold, moss-covered three-legged family credenza?
None. But what I'm only talking about is the rebuttal to the notion that a lower corporate tax rate leads to more money to hire.
It makes sense what you just said. It makes sense to me. Here's the other thing, though. Whatever the corporate tax rate is not the effective rate that is paid by American corporations.
It's a meaningless figure.
If you lower it, if you lower it to 20%, does that mean we're going to take that whatever 15% or 18%, and that means we're going to wind up paying the corporations more? Because I mean, you remember when corporations like GE and Enron were actually getting checks back from the IRS?
Right.
Like they were, you know, some struggling lower middle class family with the earned income tax credit, for Christ's sakes.
I get you. I'm trying to articulate a rebuttal to the notion that decreasing the tax rate has anything to do with creating jobs.
I won't get
into the whole above the line, below the line stuff.
No, that didn't make any sense to me in the first place, because as Sherrod Brown pointed out, we have never they've preached that gospel for years and years, but we've never actually seen it work. Lowering as Asa points out, the company can up executive compensation to increase costs, so, you know, fuck hiring more people.
Right. You know what? Rather than just saying it doesn't work, I wish Senator Brown would have said, okay, cool. Show me a time when it did produce more jobs.
Right, because that time does not exist.
Correct.
Oh, and by the way, what was that beer porn you shared with me earlier?
I was sucking down a Bell's Expedition Stout 2017 Russian Imperial Stout with a 10.5% ABV.
Wowzer. That's,
I think that's what I sent
that's
you.
You said Founder's Dirty Bastard Scotch
Ale.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Founder's Dirty Bastard Scotch Ale was another one at the place that I go, which was an excellent ale aged in scotch barrels.
Whoa.
Yes, exactly. Whoa is right.
I have to enjoy this stuff vicariously now, Steve.
Yeah. Okay, I will put my soapbox back under the bed and begin to only listen again.
No, I think your soapbox was well used. You okay, man?
So everybody... Oh, I'm fine. I'm just walking home in my lovely part of the Bronx that I live in.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Sparky.
I just posted a video of a USO on stage with Al Franken.
Yeah.
If you go to a minute 10 in that video, you'll see quite a sight.
Well, I mean, USO tours have historically been, well, they're kind of like vaudeville acts, aren't they? And there's always no small amount of cheesecake.
Mm-hmm. As well as sexual innuendos and, you know, kind of edgy comments, because, you know, typically you're kind of, you know, what percentage of the audience is, you know, young men at this, you know, even now, you know?
Well, if you go to that mark on the video, you'll see Al Franken standing there, and then Leanne with the Santa hat, her boobs hanging out, and some soldier just a rutting on her.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, dear. which again, though, isn't a justification for subsequent sexual abuse. This is how difficult the issue becomes. It's hard to separate this stuff out, and I'm especially indebted to Carol for sharing with us this evening, because we have been decidedly lacking in the in female perspective on this, and that always gives me pause to wonder and make sure that we're, you know, getting it right.
And Carol nailed it, but doesn't it establish some kind of character background?
No. Look, I mean, like, from character. Tell me if I'm getting this wrong, Steve, Rick. You can only introduce character for telling truth or untruth.
Right.
And you can only in court. You can only introduce that as impeachment stuff.
True.
So that, you know, anybody who ever comes to you, they're in legal trouble, and I say, well, man, I want you to be a character witness for me. Well, that means that person has not talked to their lawyer, because the court is generally speaking, the court is not interested in your good character or how many Wednesdays you've cooked dinner down in the fellowship hall kitchen.
Well, not necessarily my character, but somebody else's character background. Rick, you can't use that to establish a footing?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
As far as going forward?
It doesn't prove the likelihood or unlikelihood that the act was committed.
And I'm saying in a civil case, Bob, is what I'm talking
about. I know that.
Well, in any case, it doesn't really matter whether it's civil or criminal. You're still going to have the same standards for judging witnesses' credibility.
Well, damn it, I'm watching too much Judge Matheson. Because
see, the idea, this is the idea, Steve. This is the idea why, you know, the character of someone isn't something that you can necessarily, you know, make an issue. You end up having a series of mini trials over, okay, was this person, you know, did they tell the truth on this instance or whatever? I mean, you basically have to kind of limit it, or else the thing just becomes, you know, just like just a morass, let's just say, you know, the case. You know, you got to stay on point. Okay, is this person, you know, have they filed a false police report in the past? Okay, that would be a pretty... That would be some evidence that you could introduce to show that, you know, they have, you know, that their character for truth telling is not very good.
Or have they ever perjured themselves in previous proceedings? That would be admissible, something like that, correct?
Yeah. Now, if there's a question as to whether or not this was a consensual situation, you know, you could probably get into evidence. I know that the law has changed quite a bit in the last 20 years to become more pro-victim, let's just say. But, you know, you could introduce maybe evidence that, let's say, she and Al Franken had dated previously. That's just a hypothetical, for
example. But that's not character evidence.
No, that's not character evidence. No. No, that I guess that's a little bit different, but that's something that could maybe be introduced if there was a question as to the truth of what she was saying, you know, whether it was consensual or not.
And there's but this isn't that situation. But the larger question, getting back to what Steve was talking about, Steve in New York, in a situation where there is no tribunal, and you've only got the court of public opinion, and you have to rely on the for-profit media to do that work, especially in a situation such as, you know, there's a big difference between this and, say, reporting on the perjury of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Foot, because there's a tape. And to that extent, in this case, there's a photograph. And, you know, since I mentioned Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Hood, it is worth noting that Representative Ted Lieu of California showed up talking to Wolf Blitzer on the CNN, and he says that Sessions is in some deep shit, because Sessions showed up at a meeting of the, the Federalist Society or whatever, and actually joked today about his Russian connections. Sessions did. I guess maybe he hasn't gotten that target letter yet.
Well, I think he testified that he has not been questioned by, you know, any FBI investigators or by Mueller. That's my understanding, by Mueller's investigators.
Well, they'd probably have to Mirandize him if they did that, wouldn't they?
Well, if he's a target, yeah, I think they would. Well, yeah, I guess they. Well,
I mean, he's already lied about meeting
custody.
He's already lied about meeting with the guy.
Only if he's in custody do you need Miranda. Miranda only applies when there's custodial interrogation. If he's free to go or free to refuse to answer the questions, then, you know, they don't have to Mirandize him. Even if he is a target.
Oh, that's very...
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I got one more here. I got a clip here for the ages. It's a few days old. But Ivanka showed up on the couch with Kilmeade and Ducey and whoever it is. There's a new co-host woman like every other day. And she was there to tout tax reform, since Steve brought it up. I'm still trying to figure out why we need tax reform. I haven't seen any billionaires thrown out on, you know, thrown out in the street yet. But,
well, we need it, Bob, because it hasn't happened for 31 years. It's high time that, you know, the corporations stop getting their, you know, getting their clocks cleaned to tax time. Like, you know,
oh yeah, because they
I
are.
I think GE needs to get refunds.
Hey,
you know, it's not
which,
just enough
a,
not to pay there, taxes.
We all know I watch Morning Joe, and there's an ad that's been running over there from some guy who runs like Amalgamated Crankshaft. And it's an ad for tax reform. He says, "Hi, I'm Fuck Fuckerson of Amalgamated Crankshaft, an Ohio corporation. At Amalgamated Crankshaft, we provide parts to a whole lot of car companies, and we employ over 300 people at our Amalgamated Crankshaft factory." The first 30 seconds of the ad are a free ad for Amalgamated Crankshaft. And then he gets around to, "We've got to have some tax reform here, because we need tax reform, because tax reform is good, and it's got electrolytes, and it's what corporations crave." And I'm sitting there thinking, well, you know, if I'm the head of Amalgamated Crankshaft, I'll get on there and stand on my head and you know, gargle bleach if they'll give me a 30-second free ad for my company that's going to run at least once or twice a program for 3 or 4 weeks. But then again, I watch ads like that, so I guess that makes me weird. And
what? No mention of Alabama sex clams?
I love me some sex.
How are the sales of that product coming along, Bob?
Oh, yeah, we sold out almost immediately. Of course, the supply was rather low because, you know, they're hard to get at, and you got to go way up in the back of the slough, and you got to dig way into the bank, and every now and then you run into a water moccasin, and then everybody runs away for 3 weeks because they're scary and mean. But we sold right out of Alabama sex clam.
I have to tell you something. When you were saying that, I kept thinking to myself, "What is he talking about?" Then I finally did a Google of the newspaper thing. But I'll tell you, Bob, some of those are really, really good.
Well, I'm hoping big things for Cha 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 Chicory to maybe take a bite out of the ongoing deficit that we have this evening.
All right, Bob. You inspire me. I'm going to do a cha-cha-cha chicory challenge here. I'll throw in 25 and double it if it gets matched.
Okay, so 25 bucks. If it gets met, it turns into... So that winds up being a net 75 bucks if somebody will kick in 25 bucks this evening in the cha-cha-cha chicory challenge. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned, so thank you. Thank you very kindly, Billable Rick. I mentioned the speech that Sessions gave today. Man, this is spitting in the eye of a lion right here. It was the Federalist Society, and Scott and Punky kindly provided me with the link to the audio. Check this out. Or not.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You warmed my heart. The cockles of my heart, is that what Churchill said? It is really, really great to you, and thank you, General Meese, for those special words. But I just was thinking, you know, I should want to ask you, is Ambassador Kislyak in the room? Before I get started here.
Ha, 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 ha. Isn't
any Russians?
Funny.
anybody been to Russia? Got a cousin in Russia or something. I was so honored to work for General...
Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's a big joke. It's just a big joke. Our government.
Did I hear General Meese?
Yes.
Oh, isn't that just a precious little pair?
Yes.
That old fucker's still alive and kicking.
Can I just say something? I know I've been talking way too much tonight, but I'll tell you something. I've been a litigator for 13 years, and because of that, just by sheer repetition, I've learned an awful lot of words, and I've come to be fairly good at the art of word knowing. And maybe, Bob, you can agree with me here, but the level of disgustingness that these people have gone to, I've lost the ability to express in words how truly I don't have the means to do it anymore. I can string along every curse word, and it doesn't seem adequate to describe my disgust and disdain for these people. I can't do it. I'm without words and without guile to do it. Am I alone in that?
No, you are so not alone. Come Monday. Monday will be what, 11 months that we've had Trump as president? And it is wearisome. and it has been and it has been made deliberately weary, because as I've said before, you can't keep up, and there is no depth. There's no bottom. There's absolutely no bottom to their repugnance. Every time they do some new repugnant thing, you think, well, I don't think it anymore. Oh, well, that's as bad as it can get. No, it isn't. Because they will find a way to make it worse. That photograph of Steve Mnuchin standing there with that sheet of money and his black-gloved, bleach-blonde wife standing there, they look like a pair of Bond villains, for Christ's sakes. I mean, why not? God damn. And so, no, you are not by any stretch of the imagination alone. No way are you alone.
I don't know.
And again, we're at 11 months. What's this going to feel like at, you know, never mind the one-year anniversary on January 20th. What's it gonna feel like on January the 20th, 2019?
Oh, that's only 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I yearn. This is gonna sound crazy. I've been thinking. I want to get myself a decent pair of hiking boots, and, you know, the right gear for doing it. And I've told Agnes I want to start hiking our trails and going and just wandering around in the woods. Even with winter coming on, because I gotta find a way to get clear of this. The mentally healthiest I've felt was the little over a week that I had to wander around with Agnes, and we weren't just camped out on the news. We got free of it. And we talked about other things, and we enjoyed each other's company, and it felt normal. Maybe we're not supposed to feel normal. Maybe we're supposed to be harried like this.
Well, this is not normal. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that normal is a setting on a dryer, or however you say it, but we're not. This is not normal. You know, as Mr. Malloy says, you know, fascism has always been just under the soil here, but it's never been like on top of the soil. It's right here staring us in the face. And not only is it staring us in the face, but we got a significant number of our fellow countrymen going, yeah, this is what I want. This is what I want. I want to put somebody in the Senate who wants everyone to swear that rights come from Jesus. And so it's not normal.
No, but in a way, yesterday with my interview with Jeff Biggers, it was sort of instructional to have him remind me that this is not the first time that this country has been swept up in a mania toward totalitarian rule. That in fact there was a whole bunch of that in the years between the War of 1812 and the Civil War.
Well, you know what? Neither one of us was actually there, so we don't know. We can't feel it.
No, and nobody then had it up in their faces the way we do with modern media. I mean,
very true.
You have to consciously step off and step back to not be in, tomorrow's Saturday. Who are the Buckeyes playing, Steve?
Honestly, I don't know. I know next weekend is Michigan. I don't know.
Well, tomorrow's the last home game up in Morgantown. I can't remember the last time I was at a Mountaineer football game. But I was thinking, you know, if I had the wherewithal to do that, I'd get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I'd be on the road and just go up there and sit in the stands and sort of try to press, you know, just press it all back from me. And to a certain extent, this sounds a little bit like poor, pitiful me. And I don't mean it to sound that way. This is what I've chosen to do.
I'll tell you, I want to be an ignorant caveman for at least maybe a day where I don't know nothing about nothing. And all I see is, yeah.
Right.
Sorry about the noise. I'm going into my building.
Oh, that's okay. But it is wearying. And I think part of the frustration is the idea that we seem powerless to stop it. I mean, okay, we've been talking about this, the sexual harassment and the child abuse and the molestation, all of which is revolting to ponder. And the closest I've got to all of that is to think back to those years when I had a stack of case files that was probably a foot tall, and that's all it was child sexual abuse, child physical abuse, and you know, I'd get home at the end of the day and it's like, you know, just run the tequila bottle straight into my arm just to try to get clean of it. But it's frustrating to us because we see it and we don't see anything happening in response. And that's why I've said since January 20th, we have been in a constitutional crisis. Lest anybody make the mistake of not knowing it, this is what a constitutional crisis feels like. You feel your country going to hell all around you, and it feels as though one is powerless to do anything to stop it. And it seems like the structures that are provided to be a check on it are of no avail and no effect.
Yeah, they're inadequate. You know, I used to think that I got to a point where I hated this country, and it suddenly dawned on me how I knew I didn't hate this country is because I don't like where it's going. And I, in my bones, in my soul, I cry almost every night. Where are we going? And the worst part is when I think about something my mother told me the last time we talked almost a year ago. And what did she tell me? You got to vote for Trump. You know what that's like as a kid or a gay person with a mom who says to me, you got to vote for Trump. A mom who used to work as a corporate secretary, and I can promise you all that stuff that we heard him doing, she experienced. Or to hear an uncle last year on Thanksgiving tell him when he calls me to talk to me, and we ended up getting into it, which was my mistake. Well, you know, both sides were doing it. I'm like, no, both sides weren't doing it. One side was trying to take away my health care, and one wasn't. When politics get in the way of family, things are not normal.
The last time it was this broad and this deep and this hurtful, there was a war going on.
Right.
And I understand that's heartbreaking. And I don't know what that feels like. Because
I haven't spoke. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, you said the last time you spoke to your mom. God damn, Steve. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the last time I spoke, I mean, last time I didn't yell, I should say, was a year ago. I mean, there are other issues there, but that's, I won't kid you, that's salt in that wound. Plenty of salt in that wound.
Having lived in a house where in the other room Fox News was on the TV for 3 years, that was stressful for me.
And how many people here have asked that question? Like, I've asked the question, am I the crazy one? Maybe I'm the crazy one. Maybe I'm the one who doesn't see reality.
More than once, brother. More than once.
I mean,
and the people that raised you and nurtured you have went off the rails. So, of course, you're going to question your own sanity, you know?
I mean, my dad has always been a right-thinking individual, even when I was not a, I mean, I went through my right-wing days. And I don't know if I've ever told anybody here, is I've pretty much, I've lost faith. I have no faith in government. I call myself a libertarian socialist. And that's kind of probably where I feel a little bit lost too, is that I have no faith in government to do anything. I have faith in people to act together to do things. I don't have any faith in government. None.
Oh, that's probably, but as I've said before, Steve, I think that's by design.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have been conditioned to think that government can't accomplish anything, even in the face of the history of all that good government can accomplish. We just don't have good government. So if there's a modifier, I would say bad government can't accomplish anything. And we have bad government.
And think of it this way, Bob. I'll be 47 in January, which means I came of age in the Reagan era. I've never experienced that thing called good government. I mean, frankly, the Affordable Care Act was probably the only real attempt at it since Reagan. I mean, after all, it was Bill Clinton who gave us the era of big government is over stuff.
No, I think you're right. The last of anything that resembled good government went out the window on January the 20th, 1981.
Absolutely.
I've got a note here from Scott and Punky. Subject line, constitutional crisis. Yet, and I think this goes to some of what you're saying, Steve. Yes, it is a constitutional crisis in the sense of massive violations to our founding document, but it's much more than just that. It's a relentless assault on our own constitutions as human beings. There's a sense of deep immersion and daylight air at the water's surface seems impossibly distant, yet it's not enough to do us in. Instead, it feels like a form of living drowning.
Oh, Scott, wherever you are, that hits the nail on the head.
I really. It's not something you do a cowbell over because it ain't funny, but
the entire country is being waterboarded. Is essentially what's happening.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I'm going to stand up in my bedroom and I'm going to give a round of applause to Scott and Rick because that really said it. It's almost like being tortured and going, oh, please kill me. But the person torturing you goes, I'm going to make you want to die.
There's always an old joke that goes with this sort of stuff. And the old joke about what happened when the sadist and the masochist got married. And the masochist says, hurt me, hurt me. And the sadist says, no.
Oh, jeez. I think this is almost a Howard Beale moment, isn't it? Should we all open up our windows and just yell that we're mad as hell and aren't going to take it anymore?
And throw our TVs out.
And you know what? We can do that till hell freezes over. And nothing's going to change what's going on right now.
Of course.
The way that Orrin Hatch said, you know, I've allowed you to spout off as if he somehow controls the right to speak, which he does to a certain extent, but as though Sherrod Brown was some sort of child that he is allowed to express himself against his Orrin Hatch's better judgment. You know, fuck him. By the way, breaking news. I got a note from Carol. Carol said, this one was for you. How I haven't been blocked by Trump is beyond me. God knows Carol's trying. So Trump just a little bit ago tweeted, put big game trophy decision on hold until such time as I review all conservation facts, understudy for years, We'll update soon with Secretary Zinke. Thank you. Yeah, it was understudy, and they made a rule. And Carol, God bless you. Wait a minute. Really? I thought you'd appreciate an elephant head on the wall in the Oval, since it's the symbol of the Republican Party. The Dems can put the head of a jackass on the wall when you give it up. Ah! That's beautiful, Carol. That's just freaking beautiful.
Just multiple layers of meaning in that one, Bob. You know?
Yes, many layers. Many, many.
Right. By the way,
clearly.
Yeah. I want to let you know, I came across a battery operated, it was funny, lithium battery operated cattle prod, and it looked like, I didn't know if Carol needed a spare one or if she had everything she needed. I was going to get that for her for Christmas. So if she's interested, I would, and it's actually by Tesla. So it's really all futuristic and stuff. So if she needs a new cattle prod or wants a spare, let me know.
Well, you know, one always needs a spare. Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to order that.
In case it's cloudy and the solar doesn't work, the solar-powered cattle prod isn't working, you know? We're heading into winter, you know?
That's true. Right. Less daylight. Hey, some good news. Rick's challenge got met. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly, Ralphs. And that means that the fundraising goal just went down to $326. $326 to go to finish the week. And that's a lot better than $401. So thank you, Billable Rick, for the challenge. And thank you, Ralphs, for the response. Carol says, I have the sun. It's all I need. And this chair. And this ashtray. And that's all I need.
I wanted to say, again, I've said it a couple times to anyone. Anytime anybody comes up to New York, please let me know, because we will be going. I know a number of good craft beer places that we will be going to. And there's actually the beers aren't the best, but it's a great place, an old school, genuine Irish pub. It even has a Gaelic name. It's called An Beal Bacht near me. And I would love to take anybody out who comes up here to a number of places and show you some good food and
well,
good drink.
Remember, mid-February, if everything continues to go as planned, mid-February, we will be having the mini horn-in in New York.
Okay, excellent. Let me know. Well, so you and who else? Tara?
Chris from Germany and a few other folks.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. I met Tara when she came up, or when Mike and Kathy came up, when Molly, I think she sung at it was at Carnegie Hall, and met Mike and Kathy and Tara, and Sam Cedar was there.
Did you guys smoke weed?
What, say it again?
I didn't mean it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but did you guys smoke weed at all?
No, I'm probably a weirdo. Yeah, as an aside, I've had a friend of mine tell me I was the straightest gay guy she ever met. I have no fashion sense. I love to cook. I like show tunes, but I'm not a fan of Barbra Streisand.
How many Judy Garland records do you own?
Zero.
Oh, dude, I'm gonna get mail. I know it.
I know.
The horn gay community is gonna probably insist that you go into not regression therapy, but immersion therapy.
Rehab?
No, immersion Rehab. Therapy. Immersion therapy.
I've had a number of people say I need to give in my card. What was I talking about? I just started sucking down a Lagunitas stout after three beers at the local bar.
You don't smoke weed. You're probably saying that you don't smoke weed.
Yeah, I've actually never done any drugs in my life.
Holy
I've never
shit,
done weed.
Man.
I've never well, you done don't weed. Know. I've never done weed. Never done. Now, all of my friends when I was in high school were potheads, were shroom heads, were coke heads, and all that stuff. It just wasn't my thing. And I'm a legalize all drugs, yes, including heroin and coke and all that shit. But it just, you know, it's not my thing. I had friends of mine in my house who do it or did it and it doesn't bug me. It's just something I've never been into. And I remember when I was studying for the bar and had to pass my character and fitness interview, which lasted literally 90 seconds, when the guy asked me how I liked law school. I thought, you know what, I'll wait till after I'm done with that, then I'll smoke all the weed I want. It's just not my thing.
Good on you.
I mean, I don't know. I remember the first time, I know when I first moved up here from, I lived in D.C. for a number of years, and I moved up here, and I remember I lived with two women in a huge house. They were sisters. They took me to a party one night. They said, hey, you want to come to a party and meet people? And I'm like, sure. And I walk into the party, and I'm not kidding you, not 5 minutes into the party, the person comes around with a round glass flat, what looked like a plate, a cake plate with lines of coke on it. And do you want to do a line? And I was like, wow, I've arrived in New York. And again, it just wasn't my thing. And nobody cared.
But you didn't sneeze into the bowl like Woody Allen, right?
No. And we had ecstasy and Special K parties at the house I lived in, and never did it.
Well, I just had a note from Carol, and you know she never writes in all caps. This time she did. No Judy Garland?
Yeah, I know. I was like,
wait. No Judy Garland? Well, Christmas is coming to you, Steve.
And I got to, you know, I meant to call Carol and I exchanged numbers. I just haven't called her. I you know what? I love Carol, even though I've never met her, never seen her. One of these days when I get out to, wait, where does she live? Hooterville? Where is it?
Yeah, Hooterville. Yeah. Missouri.
She has a nice voice.
Yes, she does.
She has a nice voice. She sounds like she could probably be hot.
That's not what she told me. She told me, she's like,
that wrong?
I said, I can't wait to meet you. She's like, well, as long as you don't mind meeting a.
She went to the big city. She went to the big city. She's in KC. Got sick of the daily commute from Hooterville.
And
they turned her down for membership at the Ballerina Swan Lake. Country Club and Trailer Park.
The Trailer Park. Yeah. By the way, if anybody can hear, like.
And by the way, in answer to your question, John, Carol just simply said, so not hot.
Well, hey, can I, I know we don't have much time here. I just chimed in right now. I wasn't able to listen to the show tonight up until now. But I don't know if you talked about the Al Franken thing. I know people have been talking about it.
We pretty well beaten it to pieces, but swing away.
You know, I know I'm going to get some major pushback for this, but obviously I believe this woman, okay? I do. We can't afford not to believe these women who come forward about these fuckers that have power that do would think they can run roughshod over women. And that's wrong. But something smells really disgusting about this whole thing.
Okay, you know, having said that, let me read you something that Michael in Madison just sent me a little bit ago, because it segues perfectly. Michael says, I understand the wish to take Leanne Tweeden off the table, but isn't that blown out the window if, as Al has called for himself, an ethics investigation into his behavior is undertaken? Isn't it likely Tweeden would be called to testify, subpoenaed if need be? I'm actually asking you in the group. Maybe I'm wrong in my assumption. That's entirely a possibility. That she would, you know, probably not in open hearing. It's an ethics investigation. Those are generally not. Tell me if I'm wrong, Steve, but those are not done as a public forum. Michael continues and says, "Let me make this clear. I find the photo disgusting. Even if Tweeden was complicit in the photo, although Snopes has debunked that tweet." That type of humor is reprehensible, denigrating toward women, and Al of 2006 should have shown better judgment. If it were a still shot from a video depicting a satirical sketch, I might feel differently, but it's not. There's no apparent context. It just appears to be a sophomoric act of stupidity and poor judgment. Given what I know at this time, I take the photo as read, and Al should rightly feel ashamed of it. That being said, there are things I have done and that I am still ashamed of that I have long ago apologized for, too. That being said, Al apologized and called for an ethics investigation into his own behavior. If he chooses to resign or not run again, that's his call. But I think he's handled this right so far. I wonder if how he has handled this was not what Stone Hannity at all expected. That they did not expect it. My spidey sense went up when Tweeden immediately accepted his apology, despite the fact that Al claims he does not recall the rehearsal kiss in the same way, and said she's not calling for an investigation or his resignation. Maybe I'm totally off, but her close association with Hannity and the apparent foreknowledge by ratfucker Roger Stone makes me wonder if she was pressured to embellish her claims and then, facing the possibility of having to testify under oath, back down a little bit. I'm not questioning whether or not Al did something that made Tweeden uncomfortable, and I couldn't care less that she was a Playboy model. But still, Hannity and Roger fucking Stone, for Christ's sakes? Wasn't Stone pushing that bullshit about Hillary being replaced by a doppelganger last September? Yes. We can't just let rat fuckers play us with this whataboutism. They have no real concern for Tweeden's well-being, just as they have no real concern about the abuse of underage girls, be they Moore's victims at the mall or Trump's Teen USA pageant victims or anyone else. Anita Hill. It's just a game to them, and if we fall for it, they will delight in our stupidity once again. They co-opted and weaponized fake news against us almost immediately. Remember in the days after the election last November, all the talk about social media and the fake news about Hillary? That's what fake news really meant for about a week or two. Then, well, so much for fake news. If we let them, they'll take away Me Too, too. Maybe, says Michael, I'm mansplaining. I don't know. I'm open to harsh criticism on this matter. Sorry to rant. Well, don't apologize. I don't find anything to particularly take issue with there, Michael. I think that's kind of what I'm getting at when I say that there's got to be these cases have to be judged on an ad hoc case by case basis.
Wait, she was in on the picture?
No,
what?
It was thought that she was. But it was debunked. It was Snopes'd. That went away. It's not true, but we still haven't heard from the. But we still haven't heard from whomever it was.
How does Snopes know it's not true?
Well, there's a link. You can read the debunking. I mean, it's pretty thorough.
She's a right winger, dude. Oh, she's a right winger.
She is a right winger, but right wingers get sexually abused too.
Oh, I know. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I'm questioning the timing because she's going on all these shows now, The View and others. To perpetrate a, in my opinion, a character assassination against the only person in the Senate on the Senate Judicial Committee that's actually willing to ask the tough questions. I think that this is the whole a big game, just like Michael Madison said. It's a huge game, and a lot of us are buying into it. And I condemn the act. I believe her. Like I said, we cannot afford to not to believe these women. I don't care as Michael alludes,
and I think you allude too, if we were good at this, as Steve notes, we're not good at this. If we were good at this, the answer would be, yeah, you know what? I believe Leanne Tweeden, and I also believe, I still believe Anita Hill. How about y'all?
Right, and you know what's crazy? I saw a link up to a story about a bunch of the women who accused Donald Trump last year of doing what they did. Which, by the way, Tweeden had nothing to say about that, no condemnation about it, nothing to say about Roy Moore. And then all of a sudden she dropped this, you know. But like, you know, the women that you know that were accusing Trump last year, they said this is a wicked country, you know, because. These people elected this man after we came forward, and now we're forgotten by the media. They're talking about how evil the media is, and they are. They're very evil. People in the media. I swear, Bob, if I was president tomorrow, you would think I was a fascist because I would clamp down so hard on this goddamn media. These people are scum. That's what they are.
It depends on who you're talking about, and that's the problem. One man's nightshirt's another man's pajamas. By the way. Michael and Madison, you've been cleared. Just got a note from Carol. Sounds okay from the vagina section, says Carol. And Darlene just sent me a link.
I'm sorry.
Darlene just sent me a link that goes exactly to what you were talking about, Steve. Published by, written by Chauncey DeVega over at Salon, also republished at alternet.org. Johns Hopkins psychologist, Trump's presidency may be the greatest psychiatric disaster in history. And as Darlene notes in her email to me, as soon as it comes back, why did it go away? Working. Just a second. Yeah.
Hey, can I quickly say?
She says longish article, but near the end it talks of the stress on people. So maybe look that up. Chauncey DeVega, Salon, and Alternet. Trump's presidency may be the biggest psychiatric disaster in history. What was that, Rick?
I was just to say real quickly. Could everybody send their thoughts and prayers to Al Stewart because he's performing tomorrow night at the Coach House. And I'll be like one of 300 people watching him play.
Yeah, and okay. And
are you playing? Holy shit!
Yeah.
I got something for you in that regard. I know he's going to be playing the whole Year of the Cat thing, but if there's a chance to holler out a name of a song,
okay.
It comes from the I think the Modern Times. Yeah, the Modern Times album, which was before Year of the Cat. It's called Not the One.
Not the one.
And okay. I mention it because it's one of very few songs with a definite November reference.
Cool.
And it's an awesome lyric. Yeah.
Awesome.
But I envy you. I do. I envy you. And yes. Get away as quickly as you can. Be unobtrusive. And by the way, you had a note from the chat room. Stay the hell away from Bob Seger. He's recovering. There was a mention in the chat room, I think it was Kid Mark, who said he's recovering from surgery, damn it.
Yeah, nope. Isn't that one back song? Surgery. And I was going to say one more thing real quickly. I just got tickets for Jeff Lynne's ELO. He's going on tour for the first time with most of the band, first time in like 33 years. He's playing at the Forum. In August, I got my tickets for that show already. So maybe we could do a fundraising around keeping me away from that show as well. Who knows?
Isn't Turn the Page your favorite song, Bob? Didn't you say that was your favorite song, Turn the Page?
Absolutely. I love Turn the Page. I play it 6 or 7 times a day. On a long and lonely journey east of Busted Knuckle. It sucks so bad to be making all this money and riding on a tour bus and just I don't know where I am. Yep, that favorite. Absolutely love that song.
You got to throw Cletus in there. Yeah. Well, I met Cletus at the Oakle Bar or something, you know.
Cletus is a good puppy, a very good puppy. And I don't know, we could, we're out of time, got to close the program, but I guess we could always, make a challenge out of, keep Rick away from Al Stewart. but no, enjoy the show. Seriously, enjoy the show. We got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Rick, for inspiring a reduction in the deficit. We will close the week at $326 to go in fundraising, and well, that's the breaks, I guess. So it'll be $526 on Monday. It'll probably come down a little bit tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night. So hopefully it'll get down under 500. Hell, maybe it'll, who knows? Maybe we'll knock out the whole 326. Wouldn't that be freaking awesome? And I will, test turkeys going on the smoker tomorrow. I'll let you know how that goes when I get here. We'll get back Monday. And by all means, enjoy your weekend. And, you know, try to do a sort of, you know, we've all got the weekend here. Let's take a little break from the madness and get back and deal with the morons come Monday. Happy and healthy and fit and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Right? Okay. Thanks to everybody who makes the program go. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to our news ninjas. We'll try to. Ben's going to try over the weekend to get things squared away with White Rose Society. He says that the vast majority of the attacks that the server are receiving are, imagine that, from Russia. Hi, Ivan. Hey, Vlad. Fuck you. Thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.